grow up without his mama. He kept the gun on Faith. You were good yesterday, running after him in the street. A little closer, and I'd have had him dead on the ground. Vomit came into her mouth. He pushed Evelyn with a sneaker. Ask her why she gave me up. Faith didn't trust her mouth to open. Ask her why she gave me up, Caleb repeated. He raised his foot, ready to kick her mother's shattered leg. Okay, Faith yelled. Why did you give him up? Caleb said, why did you give him up, Mom? Why did you give him up, Mom? Evelyn didn't move. Her eyes were closed. Just as the panic started to well up inside Faith, her mother's mouth opened.
I didn't have a choice.
Yo, ain't that what you've been saying to me for the last year, Mom? Everybody's got choices.
It was a different time.
Her good eye opened. The lashes stuck together. She stared at Faith.
I'm so sorry, baby.
Faith shook her head. You have nothing to apologize for.
Ain't this nice? A little mother-daughter reunion here.
He shoved the chair so hard against the wall that the back leg broke.
She was ashamed of me, that's why.
He paced over to the bookcase and back.
She couldn't explain some little brown baby squirting out of her. Not like you, right? Different times.
He started pacing again.
And you think your daddy was so good growing up. Tell her what he said, Mom. Tell her what he made you do.
Evelyn lay on her side, eyes closed, arms out in front of her. The shallow, in and out of her chest, was the only thing that indicated she was still alive.
Your good old daddy told her it was me or him. What do you think about that? Mr. Galveston Insurance Agent of the Year for 6 years running, and he told your mama that she couldn't keep her baby boy, because if she did, she'd never see her other kids again.
Faith struggled not to show that he'd finally managed to hit the mark. She had adored her father, worshipped him like only a spoiled daddy's girl can. But as an adult, she could easily see Bill Mitchell giving her mother this ultimatum. Caleb had moved back to his original spot near the bookcase. The gun was down at his side, but she knew he could swing it up at any moment. His back was to the sliding glass doors. Evelyn was to his left. Faith was at a diagonal, about 12 feet away from him and waiting for all hell to break loose. She prayed Will had understood her message. The room was a clock. Faith was at 1800, or 6 o'clock. Evelyn was at 1500, 3 o'clock. Caleb was swinging back and forth between 10 and 12. Faith had offered at least 20 times over the last month to take Will's cell phone off military time. He kept refusing because he was stubborn and full of an odd mixture of shame and pride where his disability was concerned. He was also watching her through the bathroom window right now. He had told her to give him a sign. She ran her fingers through her hair, pulling her thumb and index finger into an okay sign. Faith looked down at her mother lying on the floor. Evelyn was staring at her with her one good eye. Had she seen Faith give Will the signal? Was she capable of understanding what was going to happen? Her breaths were labored, her lips were blistered. She had obviously been choked. Dark bruises circled her neck. There was a cut on the side of her head. Blood seeped from an angry gash in her cheek. Faith felt a rush of love wash through her, straight to where her mother lay. It was like a light shining out from her body. How many times had Faith gone to this woman for help? How many times had she cried on her shoulder? So many times that Faith had lost count. Evelyn raised her hand. Her fingers trembled. She covered her face. Faith turned around. A blinding bright light came through the front windows. It pierced the flimsy blinds, shining a spotlight inside the house. Faith ducked down. Maybe muscle memory recalled some training exercise from years past. Maybe it was human nature to make yourself as small as possible when you sensed something bad was about to happen. Nothing happened in the immediate. Seconds went by. Faith found herself counting.
2, 3, 4.
She looked up at Caleb. Glass shattered. He jerked as if someone had punched him in the shoulder. His expression was a mixture of shock and pain. Faith pushed herself off the floor. She lunged toward Caleb. He pointed the gun at her face. She looked straight into the threaded muzzle, the dark eye of the snubbed barrel staring back. Rage took hold, burning inside of her, urging her forward. She wanted to kill this man. She wanted to rip open his throat with her teeth. She wanted to cut his heart out of his chest. She wanted to watch the pain in his eyes as she did everything to him that he had done to her mother, her family, their lives. But she would never get the chance. The side of Caleb's head exploded. His arms jerked up. Bullets fired from the Tech-9 brought down a rain of white chalk from the ceiling. Muscle memory. 2 pops close together, one after the other. Slowly, he collapsed to the ground. The only thing Faith could hear was the sound of his body slamming into the floor. First his hip, then his shoulder, then his head popping against the hard wood. His eyes stayed open. Dark blue. So familiar. So lifeless. So long. Faith looked at her mother. Evelyn had managed to prop herself up against the wall. She still held the Glock in her right hand. The muzzle started to tilt down. The weight was too much. She dropped her arm. The gun clattered to the floor.
Mama.
Faith could barely stand. She half walked, half crawled to her mother. She didn't know where to touch her, which part of her body wasn't bruised or broken.
Come here,
Evelyn whispered. She pulled Faith into her arms. She stroked her back. Faith couldn't help it. She started to weep like a child.
It's all right, baby.
Evelyn pressed her lips to the top of Faith's head.
Everything's going to be all right.
Thursday. Chapter 21. Will tucked his hands into his pockets as he walked down the hallway to Evelyn Mitchell's hospital room. He was almost giddy with exhaustion. His vision was so sharp that the world was his Blu-ray. There was a high-pitched whine in his ear. He could feel every pore in his skin. This was why he never drank coffee. Will felt wired enough to power a small city. He had spent the last 3 nights with Sarah. His feet barely touched the ground. He stopped outside Evelyn's room, wondering if he should have brought flowers. Will had cash in his wallet. He turned around, heading back toward the elevators. He could at least get her a balloon from the gift shop. Everybody liked balloons.
Hey, Faith pushed open her mother's door. Where are you going?
Does your mom like balloons?
I'm sure she did when she was 7.
Will smiled. The last time he'd seen Faith, she was crying in her mother's arms. She looked a little better now, but not by much. How's she doing?
Okay. Last night was slightly better than the one before, but the pain is still bad.
Will could only imagine. Evelyn had been rushed to Grady with a full police escort. She'd been in surgery over 16 hours. They'd put enough metal in her leg to fill a deluxe erector set. He asked, "What about you?"
"It's a lot to take in."
Faith shook her head, as if she still couldn't make sense of it.
"I always wanted another brother, but that was only because I thought he might beat up Zeke."
"Seems like you can take care of yourself."
"It's a lot more work than you'd think."
She leaned her shoulder against the wall.
"It must have been so hard for her. What she went through? I can't imagine giving up one of my children. I'd just as soon rip out my heart."
Will looked over her shoulder at the empty hallway.
"I'm sorry. I wasn't thinking about..."
"It's okay," he told her. "You know, A surprising number of orphans end up in the penal system. He gave her some of the better examples. Albert DeSalvo, Ted Bundy, Joel Rifkin, Son of Sam. I think Eileen Wuornos was given up by her parents, too. I'll let the others know. It's good to have a woman on the list. She laughed, but obviously her heart wasn't into it. Will looked over her shoulder again. There was a large nurse with a bouquet of flowers walking down the hall. Faith said, I was sure that we weren't going to make it out of that house. There was something in her voice that told him she still wasn't past what had happened to her family. Maybe she never would be. Some things never left you, no matter how hard you tried. Will said, we should really get better codes in case this happens again. I was terrified you wouldn't understand. Thank God we had all those arguments about changing your phone off military time. Actually, I didn't understand. He grinned at her shocked expression. Will had kept his cell on speakerphone while he talked to Faith. Roz Levy had rendered her opinion as soon as the call ended, telling them the room was a clock and that she'd be more than happy to run over there with her python and take out the punk standing at noon. Will told Faith, I'd like to think that I would have figured it out eventually. You realize that a blood sugar of 1800 would probably mean I was either dead or in an irreversible coma? Sure, I knew that. Jesus Christ, she whispered. So much for our well-oiled machine. He felt the need to tell her. The helicopter was all me. The infrared camera told us where you were, confirmed that his partner was dead. She didn't seem impressed, so Will added, and the lights were my idea. They'd lined up two squad cars and blasted their xenon lights at the front windows. Caleb's shadow against the curtains had given them something to aim for. Well, thanks anyway for shooting him. She could obviously read his expression. Oh, Will, it wasn't you. He let out a long breath. Amanda promised me she'd give me one of my testicles back if I let her take the shot. I hope you got that in writing. She didn't exactly hit a bullseye. She blames my rifle. Something about me being left-handed. The grip was universal, but Faith didn't argue. Well, I'm glad you were there. It made me feel safer. He smiled, though he was fairly certain all of this could have happened without his presence. Amanda was resourceful, and Will had basically hidden behind a wall while Faith risked her life. She said, I'm glad you're with Sarah. He fought the silly grin that wanted to come. I'm just hanging in there until she decides she can do better. I wish I thought you were joking. So did Will. He didn't understand Sarah. He didn't know what made her tick or why she was with him, and yet she was. And not just that, she seemed to be happy about it. Sarah had been smiling so much this morning that she could barely purse her lips to kiss him goodbye. Will had thought maybe some toilet paper was stuck to his face where he'd cut himself shaving, but she'd told him that she was smiling because he made her happy. He didn't know what to do with that. It didn't make sense. Faith knew how to stop the grin on his face. What about Angie? He shrugged, as if Angie hadn't left so many messages on his home and cell phone that both voicemail boxes had run out of space. Each message got nastier and nastier. Each threat more severe. Will had listened to every message. He couldn't help himself. He could still see Angie with that gun in her mouth. He could still feel his heart rattle at the thought of pushing open his bathroom door and finding her bleeding out in his bathtub. Thankfully, Faith didn't dwell for long on the negative. Have you told Sarah you're terrified of chimpanzees? It hasn't really come up. It will, eventually. That's what happens in relationships. Everything comes up whether you like it or not. Will nodded, hoping his quick acquiescence would shut her up. He wasn't that lucky. Look, she put on her mom voice, the one she used when he wasn't standing up straight or wore the wrong tie. The only way you're going to screw this up is if you keep worrying about screwing it up. Will would rather be stuck in Mrs. Levy's trunk again than have this conversation.
It's Betty I'm worried about.
Really? She's become quite attached. That much was true. The dog had refused to leave Sarah's apartment this morning. Just promise me that you'll wait at least a month before you tell her that you're in love with her. He let out a stream of breath, longing for the isolation of the Corvair.
Did you know that Bayer used to own the trademark for heroin?
She shook her head at the subterfuge. The aspirin company?
They lost the trademark after World War I. It's in the Treaty of Versailles.
You learn something new every day.
Sears used to sell preloaded syringes of heroin in their catalog, $1.50 for two.
She put her hand on his arm. Thank you, Will. He patted the back of her hand once, then again, because just once was probably not enough.
It's Roz Levy, you should think. She's the one who figured it out.
She's not quite the sweet little old lady, is she?
There was an understatement.
The old biddy had made sport of watching Evelyn's worst nightmare play out.
She's a bit of a devil.
Did she give you her pigeons and bluebirds lecture? Faith turned around when she heard talking. The door to her mother's room opened. Jeremy came out, followed by a tall man with a military haircut and a square jaw that instantly brought to mind the word jarhead. He held Emma on one of his broad shoulders. The baby looked like a sack of frozen peas hanging off a skyscraper. Her body gave a slight jerk as she hiccuped. This should be fun. Faith pushed away from the wall with a groan. Will, this is my brother Zeke. Zeke, this is...
I know who this douche is.
Will extended his hand.
I've heard a lot about you.
Emma hiccuped. Zeke glowered. He didn't shake Will's hand. Will tried for light conversation.
I'm glad that your mother's okay.
He kept glowering. Emma hiccuped again. Will felt bad for the man. As the owner of a Chihuahua, he knew the difficulties of acting tough while holding something impossibly tiny in your hand.
Jeremy saved them from their staring contest.
Hey, Will. Thanks for coming.
Will shook his hand. He was a scrawny-looking kid, but he had a strong grip.
I hear your grandma's doing better.
She's tough. He draped his arm around Faith's shoulders. Just like my mom. Emma hiccuped.
Let's go, Uncle Zeke.
Jeremy grabbed him by the elbow. I told Grandma we'd move my bed downstairs so Mom can take care of her when she gets out of the hospital. Zeke took his time breaking eye contact. Emma's continued hiccups probably had something to do with his decision to follow his nephew down the hall.
Sorry, Faith apologized.
He can be a bit of an asshole. I don't know how it happened, but Emma loves him. Probably because she couldn't understand a word he said. Faith asked, Do you want to go ahead and talk to Mom?
I was just here to check on you.
She's already asked for you a couple of times. I think she wants to talk about it.
She can't talk about it with you?
I've got the gist. There's no reason for me to know the gory details. She forced a smile onto her face. Amanda told her that she promised you an hour.
I didn't think that'd actually happen.
They've been best friends for 40 years. They keep each other's promises. She patted his arm again and started to leave. Thanks for coming.
Wait.
Will reached into his jacket pocket and pulled out the envelope that had come in the mail this morning.
I've never gotten a letter before. I mean, other than Bill's.
She studied the sealed envelope. You didn't open it. Will didn't need to. She would never know how much it meant to him that she'd known that he could read the letter.
Do you want me to open it?
Hell no, she snatched it out of his hand. It's bad enough Zeke and Jeremy saw those videos I made. I had no idea I was such an ugly crier. Will couldn't disagree. Anyway, she looked down at her watch. I need to take my insulin and eat something. I'll be in the cafeteria if you need me. Will watched Faith walk down the hallway. She stopped in front of the elevator and looked back at him. While he was watching, she tore the letter in two, then tore it again. Will saluted her, then pushed open the door to Evelyn's room. Almost every surface was covered with flowers of all kinds.
Will felt his nose start to itch from the heavy perfume smell. Evelyn Mitchell turned her head toward him. She was lying in bed. Her broken leg was elevated, Frankenstein bolts jutting out of a hard cast. Her hand rested on a foam wedge. Gauze was packed where her ring finger should have been. Tubes ran in and out of her body. The gash on her cheek was held together with white butterfly tape. She looked smaller than he remembered. But then, what she had been through was the sort of thing that could reduce a person. Her lips were chapped and raw. She held her jaw still, talking with as little movement as possible. Her voice was stronger than he'd imagined it would be.
Agent Trent.
Captain Mitchell. She showed him the trigger for the morphine pump.
I've held off on this because I wanted to talk to you.
You don't have to. I don't want to cause you any more pain.
Then please sit down. It hurts my neck to look up at you.
There was already a chair pulled up beside her bed. Will sat down.
I'm glad that you're well.
Her lips barely moved.
Well, is a bit down the road. Let's just say I'm hanging in there.
Beats the alternative.
She said, Mandy told me about your part in all of this.
Will assumed that had been a very short conversation.
Thank you for looking out for my daughter.
I think you get more credit for that than I do.
Her eyes watered. He wasn't sure whether it was from pain or the thought of losing Faith. And then he remembered that she had lost another child, too.
I'm sorry for your loss.
She swallowed with obvious difficulty. The skin on her neck was nearly black with bruises. Evelyn Mitchell had been forced twice now to choose between her family with Bill Mitchell and the son she'd had with Hector Ortiz. Both times, she had made the same decision, though Caleb had made it pretty easy for her the last time. She said,
He was a very troubled young man. I didn't know how to make it better. He was so angry.
You don't have to talk about it.
A gravelly chuckle came from her throat.
No one wants me to talk about him. I think they'd rather he just disappear.
She indicated the cup of water on the table.
Could you?
Will picked up the cup and angled the straw so that she could drink. She couldn't lift her head. Gently, Will reached around and supported her. She drank for almost a full minute before releasing the straw.
Thank you.
Will sat back down. He stared at the bouquet of flowers on the table across from him. There was a business card attached to the white bow. He recognized the logo from the Atlanta Police Department. Evelyn said,
Hector was a CI.
Confidential informant.
He snitched on his cousin. They were in this gang, and it had started as something small, a reason to break into cars and snatch purses so they could play video games. And then it got really mean really fast.
Los Texicanos. She nodded slowly.
Hector wanted out. He kept talking and I kept listening because it was good for my career.
She waved her good hand in the air.
And then one thing led to another.
Her eyes closed.
I was married to an insurance salesman. He was a very kind man and a very good father, but...
Breath stuttered through her lips as she sighed.
You know how it is when you're out there in the street chasing down bad guys, and your heart is pounding and you feel like you've got the whole world bucking between your legs. And then you go home and... What? Cook dinner? Iron shirts and give the kids a bath?
Were you in love with Hector?
No.
She was firm in her answer.
Never. And the strange thing is, I didn't realize how much I was in love with Bill until I had hurt him so badly that I was going to lose him.
But he stayed with you.
On his terms, she told him. I was out of the negotiations by then. He met with Hector. They came to a gentleman's agreement.
The bank account. She turned her gaze toward the ceiling. Slowly, her eyes closed. He thought she had fallen asleep until she started talking again.
Sandra and Paul had a lot of debt from helping her family back home. They couldn't afford a child, even if they could have had one of their own. Part of the money in the account was from Hector. Part of it was from me. 10% of every paycheck I got went to Caleb. It was like tithing, only not for the church, but still for penance.
The corner of her mouth went up slightly in something like a smile.
Though I suppose that Sandra gave a lot of that money to the church every week. They were very religious, Catholic, but that didn't bother me like it bothered Bill. I thought they would give him a strong moral foundation.
The sound of laughter came from her mouth.
So much for that.
Caleb found out about you when Sandra got sick. She looked at Will.
I got a call from her. She sounded like she was warning me, which didn't make sense at the time, so I ignored it. The first time I saw him as a grown man was at her funeral.
She shook her head at the memory.
God, he looked just like Zeke at that age. More handsome, if you want to know the truth. More angry, which was the problem.
Her head kept moving side to side.
I didn't see how angry he was until it was too late. I had no idea.
Did you talk to Caleb at the funeral?
I tried to start a conversation, but he just walked away. A few weeks later, I was cleaning the house and I noticed things were out of place. My office had been searched. He did a very good job. I wouldn't have noticed if not for the fact that I was looking for a particular thing, she explained. I kept a lock of his baby hair hidden somewhere the children didn't know about. I went to look for it, and it was gone. I should have known then. I should have realized how obsessed he was with me, how much he hated me.
Evelyn stopped to catch her breath. Will could see that she was tired, but still she continued.
I called Hector to meet. We'd been in touch since Sandra got sick. There wasn't much time to catch up. We'd go to a Starbucks down by the airport so nobody would see us. It was the same as before. All that hiding. All that sneaking around so that my family wouldn't find out.
She closed her eyes again.
Caleb was constantly in trouble. I tried everything with him. Even offered to give him money so that he could go to college.
Faith's struggling to help Jeremy with his tuition, and here I was offering this boy a full ride.
He just laughed in my face.
Her tone turned sharp, angry.
The next day, I got a call from an old friend in narcotics. They'd picked up Caleb with some serious weight on him. I had to get Mandy to pull some strings. She didn't want to. She said he'd been given too many chances already, but I begged her.
Heroin?
Coke, she corrected. Heroin would have been beyond my reach, but the coke we could work with. They knocked it down because we agreed to send him to rehab.
You sent him to Healing Winds.
Hector lives a few miles from there. His cousin's boy had been at the facility, Ricardo. And Chuck was there. Poor Chuck.
She stopped, swallowing to clear her throat.
He called me at the beginning of this year to make amends. He's been sober for 8 months now. I knew that he was doing some counseling work at Healing Winds, and I thought Caleb would be safe there.
Chuck shared his story with them.
Apparently, that's one of the steps. He told them about the money, and of course, even though Chuck assured them that I had nothing to do with it, they didn't believe him.
It was Chuck in the hospital that day. He was the cop who asked Sarah whether or not the kid was going to make it. She nodded.
He saw what happened to me on the news and came down to see if he could help. He didn't stop to realize that with his record, no one would want his help.
I've asked Mandy to try to smooth things over with his parole officer. It was really me who got him into trouble.
My guys have always stood up for me even when it wasn't in their best interest.
Do you think Caleb thought you were on the take like the rest of them?
She was obviously surprised by the question.
No, Agent Trent. I really don't think he did. He had this preconceived notion of me as cold and uncaring, the mother who never loved him. He said that the only thing he'd inherited from me was my black heart.
Will remembered the song that had been playing when Faith pulled up to her mother's house.
Back in Black. It was his theme song. He kept insisting I listen to the words, though who the hell knows what all that screeching is.
It's about taking revenge on people who've given up on you.
Ah.
She seemed relieved to finally understand.
He played it over and over again on my kitchen radio. And then Faith came and the music stopped. I was terrified. I don't think I've ever held my breath for that long. But they didn't want Faith. Not Caleb's crew, at any rate. Benny Chu told them that he would handle everything. He kept Ricardo back with him. The H inside him was much too valuable. But he told the other boys to take me and leave. So they did.
Will wanted to be sure about the sequence. Caleb was there at the same time as Faith.
He looked at her out the window.
Evelyn's voice trembled.
I have never been so frightened in my life. Not before that, anyway.
Will was more than familiar with that kind of fear. What happened before Faith came? You were making sandwiches, right?
I knew Faith would be late. Those sessions usually run long. There's always some jackass in the first row who wants to show off.
She was silent for a moment, collecting her thoughts.
Hector came to get me at the grocery store. He knew my routines. That's the sort of man he was. He paid attention when you told him something.
She was silent a moment, perhaps in honor of her former lover.
He'd gone to visit Caleb at rehab and been told that he'd checked himself out. They don't lock them down. Caleb just walked out. We shouldn't have been surprised. I had already made some calls and figured out that Ricardo was getting himself mixed up in things that were not going to be good for any of them.
Heroin. She let out a slow breath.
Hector and I put it together as I drove him back to the house. We knew that Ricardo was working at Julia's shop, just like we knew that nothing good was going to come out of any of these boys getting together. Folie à plusieurs.
Will had heard the phrase before. It referred to a psychological syndrome where a group of seemingly normal people developed a shared psychosis when they were together. The Manson family, the Branch Davidians. There was always an unstable leader at the center of the sickness. Roger Ling had called it the head of the snake. A man like Roger Ling should know.
Evelyn said, "Part of me wanted Faith to come home early. I wanted her to meet Hector so I would be forced into explaining."
Did Caleb kill Hector?
I think it must have been him. It was sneaky and cowardly. I heard the gun. You don't forget the sound a silencer makes once you've heard it before. And I looked out into the carport. The trunk was closed, and there was no one there. I didn't think twice. Maybe I had thought this was going to happen all along. I scooped up Emma and took her into the shed. I came back with my gun, and there was a man in the laundry room. I shot him before he could open his mouth. And then I turned around, and there was Caleb.
You struggled with him.
I couldn't shoot him. He was unarmed. He was my son, but I got the better of him.
She looked down at her wounded hand.
I don't think he was expecting me to be so aggressively opposed to his trying to cut off my finger.
He cut it off right then? Will had assumed it was part of a later negotiation.
One of the other boys sat on my back while Caleb cut it off. He used the bread knife. He sawed it, back and forth like you do with a tree. I think he enjoyed hearing me scream.
How did you get the knife away from him?
I don't really know. It's one of those things that happens without your thinking about it. Actually, I don't remember much of what came next, but I do recall that other boy falling on top of me and the feel of that knife going into his stomach. She exhaled sharply. I ran into the carport to get Emma and get the hell out of there. And then I heard Caleb screaming, "Mama, Mama." She paused for another moment. He sounded like he was hurt. I don't know what made me go back inside. It was instinctual, like with the knife, but that was self-preservation and this was self-destruction. She obviously still struggled with the memory. I was aware of it. How wrong it was, I remember thinking quite clearly as I ran past my car and back into the house that this was one of the stupidest things I would ever do in my life. And I was right. But I couldn't stop myself. I heard him crying for me, and I just ran back inside. She paused again for breath. Will could see that the angle of the sun had changed so that it was shining into her eyes. He got up and tilted down the blinds. She breathed out an exhausted sounding, "Thank you. Do you want to rest?" "I want to finish this, and then I never want to talk about it again." That sounded exactly like the kind of thing Faith would say. Will knew better than to argue. He sat down in the chair, waiting for her to continue. Evelyn didn't start back immediately. For a full minute, she just lay there, her chest rising and falling as she breathed. Finally, she said, "For about 3 years after he was born, around once a month, I'd tell Bill and the kids I had to go do paperwork at the office. Usually it was a Sunday while they were at church because it was easier." She coughed. Her voice was getting raspier. "But I'd really go to the park up the street, and I would sit on that bench by myself. Or if it was raining, I would sit in my car, and I would just cry and cry. Not even Mandy knew about it. I've shared everything in my life with her, but not this." She gave Will a meaningful look. "You don't know how hard it was for her with Kenny. She couldn't give him children, and he wanted a family. His own blood. He was very insistent about that. Telling her about how I longed for Caleb would have been cruel." Will felt a little squeamish hearing something so personal about his boss. He tried to get Evelyn back to the day she'd been abducted. "Caleb tricked you to get you back into the house. That's why you didn't take Emma and leave?" She was silent long enough to let him know that she was aware he was changing the subject. "You can't fool someone who doesn't want to be fooled." Will wasn't so sure about that, but he nodded anyway. "I ran into the kitchen. There was Benny Chu." Of course it was Benny Chu. Carnage everywhere. He was in his element. "We had a bit of a struggle, which he won, mostly because he had help. He wanted the money. Everybody wanted the money. The place was filled with angry men demanding money." "Except Caleb," Will guessed. "Except Caleb," she confirmed. "He just sat on the couch eating sandwich meat right out of the bag, watching them run around and tear apart my house. I think he loved it. I think it was the most fun he had ever had in his life, watching me sitting there, scared to death, while his friends ran around like chickens with their heads cut off looking for something that he knew wasn't there." "What about the A on the bottom of the chair?" She gave a stuttered laugh. "That was an arrow. I assumed that the crime scene techs would find it. I wanted them to know that the main culprit was sitting on the couch. Caleb must have left hair, fiber, fingerprints." Will wondered if Abidi Mittal's team would have figured out the message. Will had certainly botched the job. She asked, "Tell me, did they really dig up my backyard?" Will realized she meant Caleb's crew, not Abidi Mittal's. You told them the money was there?
She chuckled, probably thinking about the boys running around in the dark with shovels.
I thought it seemed plausible, inasmuch as it's happened in the movies.
Will didn't confess that he'd seen too many of those movies himself. Abruptly, Evan's demeanor changed. She looked back at the ceiling. The tiles were stained brown. It wasn't much of a view. Will recognized an avoidance technique when he saw one. She whispered,
I keep struggling with the fact that I killed my son.
He was going to kill you. And Faith. He killed countless more people.
She kept staring at the tiles.
Mandy told me not to talk to you about the shooting.
Will knew that Caleb Esposito's death was being reviewed by the police, but he assumed Evelyn would be cleared in a few days, just as Faith had been.
It was self-defense.
She let out a slow breath.
I think he wanted me to make a choice between the two of them. Between him and Faith.
Will didn't confirm that he shared this opinion.
He could forgive his father. Hector had a nice life, but he never married and he never had another child. But when Caleb saw what I had, what I had struggled to build back with Bill and the children, he resented the hell out of it. He hated me so much.
Her eyes glistened with tears.
I remember one of the last things I told him before all of this happened was that holding on to that kind of grudge was like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die.
Will guessed this was the kind of advice mothers gave their sons. Unfortunately, he'd had to learn that lesson the hard way.
Do you remember anything about where they kept you?
It was a warehouse. Abandoned, I'm sure. I yelled enough to wake the dead.
How many men were there?
At the house? I think 8. There were only 3 at the warehouse, counting Caleb. Juan and David were their names. They tried not to use them, but they weren't very sophisticated, if you get my meaning.
Juan Castillo had been shot outside of Julia Ling's warehouse. David Herrera had been shot in cold blood right in front of Evelyn and Faith. Benny Chu, Hironobu Kwan, Hector Ortiz, Ricardo Ortiz. In all, 8 people were dead now because of one man's 20-year grudge. Evelyn must have been thinking the same thing. Her voice took on a desperate tone.
Do you think I could have stopped him?
Short of killing Caleb before it happened, Will didn't see how.
Hate like that doesn't burn out.
She didn't seem comforted.
Bill thought what happened with Faith was my fault. He said that because I was with Hector, I took my eye off my children. Maybe he was right.
Faith is pretty determined to do her own thing.
You think she takes after me?
She waved away Will's protest.
No, she is exactly like me. God help her.
There are worse things.
Evelyn's eyes closed again. Will stared at her face. Her features were almost obscured by the swelling. She was about Amanda's age. The same kind of cop, but not the same kind of woman. Will hadn't spent a lot of his life feeling envious of other people's parents. It was a waste of time to think about what could have been. But talking to Evelyn Mitchell, knowing the sacrifices she had made for all of her children, Will couldn't help but feel a little jealous. He stood, thinking he should let her sleep, but Evelyn's eyes opened. She pointed to the pitcher of water. Will helped her drink from the straw. She wasn't as thirsty this time, but Will saw her hand clench around the morphine trigger.
Thank you.
She put her head back on the pillow. She pressed the trigger again. Will didn't take his seat.
Can I get you anything else before I leave?
She either didn't hear the question or chose to ignore it.
I know Mandy is hard on you, but it's because she loves you.
Will felt his eyebrows shoot up. The morphine had started working fast.
She's so proud of you, Will. She brags about you all the time. How smart you are. How strong. You're like a son to her. in more ways than you know.
He felt the need to glance over his shoulder in case Amanda was laughing from the doorway. Evelyn said,
"She should be proud of you. You're a good man. And I wouldn't want my daughter partnered with anyone else. I was so happy when you two got together. I only wish it had turned into something more."
He checked the door one more time.
"No Amanda."
When he turned back around, Evelyn was staring at him. She asked,
"May I be honest with you?"
He nodded, though Will wondered if that meant she hadn't been honest so far.
"I know you've had a difficult life. I know how hard you've worked to turn yourself into the right kind of person. And I know you deserve happiness. And it's not going to come from your wife."
As usual, Will's first impulse was to take up for Angie.
"She's been through a lot.
You deserve so much better."
He felt the need to tell her,
"I've got some demons of my own."
"But yours are the good demons. The kind that make you stronger for having them."
She tried to smile.
"If I got rid of my demons, I'd lose my angels."
He took a wild guess.
"Hemingway?" "Tennessee Williams."
The door opened. Amanda tapped her watch.
"Time's up."
She waved for him to leave. Will looked at the clock on his cell phone. She'd given him exactly an hour.
"How did you even know I was here?"
"Walk and talk."
She clapped her hands together.
"Our girl needs her rest."
Will touched Evelyn's elbow because that was the only place that wasn't bandaged or hooked up to something.
"Thank you, Captain Mitchell."
"Take care of yourself, Agent Trent."
Amanda gave Will a shove as he left the room. He almost knocked down a nurse in the hallway. Amanda said,
"You tired her out."
"She wanted to talk.
She's been through a lot."
"Are there going to be any problems on her shooting Caleb Esposito?"
Amanda shook her head.
"The only person who should be worried is Roz Levy. If it was left to me, I'd have her up on obstruction charges."
Will didn't disagree, but Mrs. Levy had perfected her old lady act. No jury in the world would ever convict her.
"I'll get the old hag eventually,"
Amanda promised.
"She's like a stick, always stirring up shit."
"Right."
Will tried to wrap this up. Sarah had gotten off work 5 minutes ago. This morning, he'd suggested they have lunch together, but he wasn't sure she would remember. He told Amanda,
"I'll see you tomorrow."
He started walking toward the elevator. To his dismay, Amanda followed him. She asked,
"What did Evelyn tell you?"
He lengthened his strides, trying to lose her, or at least make her have to work for it.
"The truth, I hope." "I'm sure it was buried in there somewhere."
Will hated that she could so easily sow doubt in his mind. Evelyn Mitchell was Amanda's best friend, but the two women were nothing alike. Evelyn didn't play games. She didn't take pleasure in humiliating people.
"I think she told me what I needed to know."
He punched the down button on the elevator. He couldn't resist.
"She said that you were proud of me."
Amanda laughed.
"Well, that doesn't sound like me at all."
"No."
A thought occurred to Will. Maybe Evelyn had been dancing around the truth after all. Had she secretly given him a clue?
Will felt a wave of nausea come over him.
"You're like a son to her, in more ways than you know."
He turned to Amanda, preparing himself for the worst day of his life.
"Are you going to tell me that you're really my mother?"
Her laugh echoed down the hallway. She braced her hand against the wall so she wouldn't fall over.
"All right."
He punched the button for the elevator again, and again. And then a third time.
"I get it. Very funny."
She wiped tears from her eyes.
"Oh, Will, do you really think a child of mine would turn out to be a man like you?"
"You know what?"
He bent down so that he could look her in the eye.
I'm going to take that as a compliment, and you can't stop me.
Don't be ridiculous.
He walked toward the emergency stairwell.
Thank you, Amanda, for saying such a nice thing to me. Come back here.
He pushed open the door.
I will treasure it forever. Don't you dare walk away from me.
Will did just that, taking the steps two at a time, safe in the knowledge that her little feet could not keep up with him. Chapter 22. Sarah took off her reading glasses and rubbed her eyes. She had been sitting at the table in the doctor's lounge for at least 2 hours. The patient's chart on the tablet in front of her was starting to blur. She had slept a total of 6 hours in the last 4 days. Her level of exhaustion was reminiscent of her residency when she'd slept on a cot in the broom closet behind the nurse's station. The cot was still there. Grady had undergone a billion-dollar renovation since the last time Sarah worked in the emergency department, but no hospital had ever wasted money on making residents' lives easier. Nan, the student nurse, was on the couch again. She had a half-empty box of cookies on one side of her and a bag of potato chips on the other. Her thumbs were barely visible as they furiously tapped on her iPhone. She giggled every few minutes as, presumably, a new email came in. Sarah wondered if it was possible that the girl was getting younger before her eyes. Her only consolation was that, in a few years, the junk food Nan loved so much would start to matter.
"What's up?" Nan asked, dropping the phone. "You cool?"
"I'm cool." Sarah was oddly relieved that the girl was talking to her again. Nan had been pouting since she'd realized that Sarah was not going to share the juicy details of her part in the hospital shooting. The girl stood, brushing crumbs off her scrubs.
"You want lunch? I think Krakauer was going to order from the hut."
"Thanks for asking, but I've got plans." Sarah looked at her watch. Will was supposed to take her to lunch. It would be their first date. Which said a lot about the way Sarah's life was going lately, considering Will was the reason she wasn't getting any sleep.
"Later."
Nan didn't so much push open the door as throw her body against it. Sarah took a moment to enjoy the peace and quiet in the lounge. She reached into her pocket and pulled out a folded sheet of paper. She'd accidentally left her glasses in her car this morning and had to hike back up the stairs in the parking deck to fetch them. That was when she'd found the note stuck under her windshield wiper. Oddly enough, it wasn't the first time someone had left the word cunt on Sarah's car. She supposed she should be grateful that this time it wasn't keyed into the paint. Sarah didn't have to consult a handwriting expert to know that the message was from Angie Trent. There had been another note left on Sarah's car yesterday morning, though this time the greeting had been waiting for her when she left her apartment. Angie was getting better. This second note packed more punch than the more innocuous whore from the previous day. Sarah wadded up the paper and threw it toward the trash can. Of course she missed. She got up to retrieve the note. Instead of tossing it into the trash where it belonged, she unfolded the paper again and stared at the word. It was certainly nasty, but Sarah could not help but think it was deserved. In the heat of the moment, she never let herself think about the wedding ring around Will's finger. The cold light of day was another matter. He was a married man. Even without that legal designation, there was still a bond between him and Angie. They were both connected in a way that Sarah would never understand. And it was very clear that Angie was not going to bow out gracefully. The only question was how long it would take before the woman managed to drag Sarah down into the gutter with her. There was a knock at the door. Sarah made sure the note was in the trash before opening the door. Will was there. He had his hands in his pockets. Though they had been together in every way possible, the first 10 minutes between them were always awkward. It was as if he was perpetually waiting for Sarah to make the first move, to give him some sort of sign that she hadn't yet tired of him. He asked, "Is this a bad time?"
She opened the door wide.
Not at all.
He glanced around the room.
Am I allowed back here?
I think we can make an exception. He stood in the middle of the room. His hands stayed in his pockets. Sarah asked, How's Evelyn doing?
She's good. At least, I think she is.
He took his hands out of his pockets, but only to start twisting the wedding band on his finger.
Faith's going to take some time off work to take care of her. I think it'll be good for both of them to have some time together. Or really bad. You never know.
Sarah couldn't help it. She looked at the wadded-up note in the trash can. Why was he still wearing his wedding ring? Probably for the same reason Angie kept leaving notes on Sarah's car. Will asked,
What is it?
She indicated the table. Can we sit down? He waited until she was seated, then took the chair across from her. He said,
This doesn't sound good.
No, she agreed. He tapped his fingers on the table.
I think I know what you're going to say.
She said it anyway. I like you, Will. I really, really like you.
But?
She touched his hand, resting her finger on his wedding ring.
Yeah, he said. No explanation, no excuse.
No offer to take off the ring and throw it to the wind. Or, at the very least, stick it in one of his damn pockets. Sarah forced herself to continue. I know that Angie is a big part of your life. I respect that. I respect what she means to you. She waited for a response, but none seemed to be coming. Instead, Will took her hand. His thumb traced along the lines in her palm. Sarah couldn't stop the reaction her body felt from his touch. She looked down at their hands together. She let her finger slip under the cuff of his shirt. The ridge of the scar felt rough against her skin. She thought about all of the things she did not know about him. The torture he had endured. The pain he'd brought on himself, and all of it had happened with Angie right by his side. I can't compete with her, Sarah admitted. And I can't be with you if I'm worried about you wanting to be with her. He cleared his throat.
I don't want to be with her.
She waited for him to say that he wanted to be with Sarah, but he didn't. She tried again. I can't be second place. I can't know that no matter how much I might need you, you'll always go running to Angie first. Again, she waited for him to say something, anything that would convince her that she was wrong. Seconds ticked by. It felt like an eternity. When he finally spoke, his voice was so quiet that she could barely hear him.
She cried wolf a lot.
He licked his lips.
When we were little, I mean.
He glanced up to make sure Sarah was listening, then looked back down at their hands.
There was this one time when we were placed together. It was a foster home. More like a factory farm. They were doing it for the money. At least the wife was. The husband was doing it for the teenage girls.
Sarah felt her throat tighten. She struggled against the impulse to feel sorry for Angie.
So, like I said, Angie cried wolf a lot. When she accused the guy of molesting her, the caseworker didn't believe her. Didn't even open a file. Didn't listen to me when I said she wasn't lying this time.
His shoulders went up in a shrug. I would hear her at night sometimes, screaming when he heard her.
He heard her a lot. None of the other kids cared. I guess they were happy it wasn't happening to them. But for me,
his words trailed off. He watched his thumb move along the back of her fingers.
I knew that they'd have to open an investigation if one of us got hurt, or hurt ourselves.
He tightened his grip around her hand.
So I told Angie this is what I'm going to do, and I did it. I took a razor blade out of the medicine cabinet and I cut myself. I knew it couldn't be a half measure. You've seen it.
He gave a strained laugh.
It's not a half measure.
No, she agreed. It was hard to understand how he'd managed not to pass out from the pain.
So,
Will said.
That got us out of that home, and they shut it down. And the people running it weren't allowed to foster kids anymore.
He looked up, blinking a few times to clear his eyes.
You know, one of the things Angie said to me the other night was that I would never do that for you. Never cut myself like that. And I think she's right.
There was a sadness and a smile.
Not because I don't care about you, but because you would never put me in that kind of situation. You would never ask me to make that choice.
Sarah looked into his eyes. The sun streaming in through the windows turned his eyelashes white. She could not imagine what he'd been through. The level of desperation that had driven him to take that razor in hand.
I should let you get on with your day.
He leaned over and kissed her hand, letting his lips linger for a few seconds. When he straightened up, something about him had changed. His voice was firmer, more determined.
You have to know that if you ever need me, I'll be there, no matter what else happens. I'll be there.
There was something final in what he said, as if everything was settled. He almost seemed relieved.
Will, it's all right.
He gave one of his awkward laughs.
I guess you're immune to my astounding charm.
Sarah felt a lump in her throat. She couldn't believe that he was giving in so easily. She wanted him to fight for this. She wanted him to pound his fist on the table and tell her there was no way this was over, that he wasn't going to give her up that easily. But he didn't. He just slid his hand out of hers and stood up.
Thank you. I know that sounds stupid.
He glanced at her, then at the door.
Just thank you.
She heard his footsteps cross the floor, the noise from the hallway as the door swung open. Sarah pressed her fingers to her eyes, trying to stop the tears. She couldn't get past his tone of resignation, his easy acquiescence to what he clearly felt was inevitable. She had no idea what his story about Angie was meant to accomplish. Was Sarah supposed to feel sorry for the woman? Was she supposed to find it romantic that Will was ready to kill himself in order to rescue her? She realized now that Will was more like Jeffrey than she'd wanted to admit. Maybe Sarah had a thing for firemen, not cops. Both men had shown a propensity for running straight into burning buildings. In the last week alone, Will had been shot at by gangsters, threatened by a psychopath, browbeaten by at least three women, emasculated in front of strangers, crammed into the trunk of a car for hours on end, and willingly volunteered himself to go into a situation where he knew there was a high probability that he would be killed. He was so damn intent on rescuing everyone else in the world that Will didn't realize what he really needed was rescuing from himself. Everyone took advantage of him. Everyone exploited his good graces, his decency, his kindness. No one thought to ask Will what he needed. His whole life had been spent in the shadows. The stoic kid sitting in the back of the classroom, afraid to open his mouth for fear of being found out. Angie kept him in the dark because it served her selfish needs. Sarah had quickly realized her first time with Will that he'd never been with a woman who really knew how to love him. No wonder he had capitulated so easily when she told him it was over. Will had taken it as a given that nothing good in his life would ever last. That was why he had sounded so relieved. His toes had been dangling over the edge. He was too afraid to take the leap because he'd never really fallen. Sarah felt her mouth open in surprise. She was just as guilty as the rest of them. She had been so desperate for Will to fight for her that it had never occurred to her that Will was waiting for Sarah to fight for him. She was through the door and running down the hallway before logic could intervene. As usual, the ER was packed. Nurses ran with bags of IVs, gurneys flew past, Sarah sprinted to the elevator. She stabbed the down button a dozen times, silently begging the doors to open. The stairs exited at the back of the hospital. Parking was in the front. Will would be home by the time she ran around the building.
Sarah looked at her watch, wondering how much time she had wasted feeling sorry for herself. Will was probably halfway to the decks by now. Three structures, six stories of cars, more if he'd used one of the decks for the university. She should wait in the street. Sarah tried to map the roads in her head. Bell, Armstrong. Maybe he had parked at the Grady Detention Center. The doors finally opened. George, the security guard, was standing there with his arm resting on his gun. Will was beside him. George asked,
"Everything okay, Doc?"
Sarah could only nod. Will stepped off the elevator, a sheepish look on his face.
"I forgot that Betty's at your place."
He gave that familiar, awkward smile.
"At the risk of sounding like a country music singer, you can take my heart, but I can't let you take my dog."
Sarah was bumped by an EMT passing behind her. She braced her palms against Will's chest to keep from falling. He just stood there, with his hands in his pockets, smiling down at her with a curious look on his face. Who had ever taken up for this man? Not his family, who'd abandoned him to state care. Not the foster parents, who'd thought he was expendable. Not the doctors who'd experimented on his busted lip, not the teachers and social workers who'd taken his dyslexia for stupidity, and especially not Angie, who had so easily gambled with his life. His precious life.
"Sarah?"
Will looked concerned.
"Are you okay?"
She slid her hands up to his shoulders. Sarah could feel the familiar hard muscle beneath his shirt, the heat from his skin. She had kissed his eyelids this morning. He had delicate lashes, blonde and soft. She had teased him, kissing his eyebrows, his nose, his chin, letting her hair drape across his face and chest. How many hours had Sarah spent over the last year wondering how the scar above his mouth would feel against her lips? How many nights had she dreamt about waking up in his arms? So many hours. So many nights. Sarah stood on her toes to look him in the eye. "Do you want to be with me?"
"Yes."
She relished the sound of his certainty. "I want to be with you, too." Will shook his head. He looked like he was waiting for the punchline to a very bad joke.
"I don't understand."
"It worked."
"What worked?"
"Your astounding charm." His eyes narrowed.
"What charm?"
"I changed my mind." He still didn't seem to believe her. "Kiss me," she told him. "I changed my mind."
This is Kathleen Early. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Fallen, a novel, by Karen Slaughter. Presented by HarperCollins and Harper Audio. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. The director was Enoch Jensen. Executive producer, Suzanne Franco Mitchell. Text copyright 2011 by Karen Slaughter Publishing, LLC. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.